Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. Do you ever find yourself on the edge of despair? Has life not turned out quite like you thought it would? Did it not yield to you all that it seemed to promise while you were in your youth? If so, then you're not alone. And in today's podcast, we take a look at the ebb and flow of life and take some advice from the wisest man that ever lived. Join me now as we see beyond all of our effort and output and all of our climbing and striving to discover what is really going on just beyond it all. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. So glad you're here. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. Welcome to our podcast and welcome to Sunday. You know, the next few weeks we're going to be starting a series and I'm going to call it Wise Man Says. And it's really an exploration of some themes. We're going to just extract some amazing bits of wisdom from the wisdom literature of Ecclesiastes. And it is not going to be a Bible study as such, but it is going to be something that I think all people who are doing laps around the sun can certainly appreciate. And today's title is called Wise Man Says, Nothing New Here. And we're getting at this idea that despair kind of sets in. We're tapping in to the question of where do we get meaning in life anyway? And those are big existential questions. And as you know, I love big existential questions because they open the door for a new way of thinking, not just new information. Information doesn't always change us. It informs us, but we have to think in new ways before real transformation takes place. And so today we begin with Wise Man Says, Nothing New Here. And I think I'll start by sharing with you a little bit of my story. When I was in college, I remember being so enthusiastic about graduating and getting on with my life. I was graduating with a BA in pastoral ministries, and I could not wait to go out there and start my work in a church as a pastor. And college was kind of like a bipolar nanny that was, in one sense, helping me to accomplish that dream, but at the same time, it was kind of preventing me from starting it. And I was just chomping at the bit to get going and to get started. And I just couldn't wait anymore. I had to accomplish all my dreams that were just pressing in on me. I mean, I had new ideas. And man, I was certain that after graduation, the big wide world was going to open easily to me because of the amount of enthusiasm, the abundance of effort and output that I was going to put in it. I guarantee you, nobody was going to outwork me. And so as a result, I was going to be a huge success, or so I thought. Like many of you, I quickly learned that nobody in the world took me seriously at the age of 22. I had no street credit. And that's okay. I figured, you know what, I'm going to prove everybody wrong anyway, so I'm just going to double down as the general contractor of my dreams. I mean, I would put on late nights, long hours. I would do extracurricular events and efforts. And these were just all the fruit of how I was going to outwork everybody else to see that my radical new ideas would soon come into play. I was going to change everything. I mean, I was in college learning about how certain aspects of the church were all wrong, and I was there to change it, to fix it, to correct it, to really save the world. And, of course, it wasn't very long. In fact, 6 months after my first hire at the church when I was fired, it didn't take me very long to realize that those in power remain in power by squashing new ideas, not by adopting new ideas. But nonetheless, I didn't deter easy, just like many of you who went out to start your lives and your careers. You got knocked down, but you got right back up, just like I did. And in this phase of life, we just don't quit. We say, well, that's the way it is. I'm going to just keep on going. And if doubling down on my efforts didn't produce my dreams by that time, then certainly tripling down on my efforts would certainly get things going. All this effort is powered by what I call one-day syndrome. And one-day syndrome really is something that allows us to endure the suffering and the genuine hardship that we go through, especially when we're starting out. We're just poor. We got big ambitions and not a lot of support. And it's really hard to get going when you have no street credit, right? But you can endure it so long as you have one-day syndrome. And that's just the sense that you truly believe that these hardships and these sufferings are really only just temporary, because you're soon going to pull out of them, probably within the next couple of years. I mean, your frame of reference is that, yeah, I'm having a hard time this year, but by next year, or at least in 2 years, I'm going to be well beyond this. And one-day syndrome is really just faith by another name, isn't it? Yeah, I just believe that it was going to be better. And my feverish climbing, much like yours, and all my striving, it pulled me out of these small little holes where I realized, okay, well, perhaps it was that particular employer or church or pastor or boss that was so bad. But, you know, I'll crawl out of this little hole and I'll get going on to the next one, thinking that I was on this big open plain, but not really realizing that I was located at the bottom of a huge mountain, right? I didn't realize that I was at the bottom of a huge mountain. And that's a very eye-opening experience. Humility is really sobering. I mean, it hurts to admit that I didn't know what I thought I did. It pained me so much at that time to think that I was not original. I mean, that was the gas that was fueling me, was that I'm original and I'm going to bring something new to the world. But I wasn't. Nothing was new with me. The idea that I was standing at the bottom of this huge mountain, this giant ant pile beneath the immeasurable weight of countless others who shared my same original dream. It's like, not only was I not original, but I was at the bottom of a mountain of people who also shared the same thing. And it was a weight of despair that was actually setting in on me. I mean, once we realize that our biggest dreams are really far away, the next thing we focus on are the immediate and short-term realities. I mean, those things become priorities. I mean, as long as you're thinking, man, by next year, I'm going to be cruising right along. I'll have a good income. I'll have a good reputation. I'll have a strong ministry. I'll have this going, that going. Then you can kind of endure the lousy apartment, the low income, the starving, the bad choices, the lack of opportunity to exercise, and all those types of things. You can set all those short-term realities away when your one-day syndrome is pushing you into the next year. But when you realize under the weight of reality that it's not going to be a year, it might not even be 10 years, then all of a sudden you need to get serious about your life. And this is the first taste we get of what it's like to settle. You know, our souls kind of show their true colors at that moment, don't they? I mean, a choice emerges right before us once we recognize that we're part of a larger moving cycle that has pre-existed us and it's going to outlast us. There's this whole machine that we're a part of. And the question that emerges is, do we just bypass this process as if our dreams were somehow disconnected from everybody else's? If so, our soul is sick. It's detached. It's fragmented. The other choice is to simply ask, do we humbly begin serving right where we are, trusting that more will come as we learn? If so, then our soul, while immature, has certainly grasped something of wisdom. You see, that choice is huge, and the temptation is also huge. If you're facing a giant mountain and you just can't see yourself waiting the time that it's going to take, then the end around is your only option. The shortcut is the temptation. And the shortcut is always, how do I get around everybody who's in line? And that has something to do with your soul, if you're motivated to do that. You see, before long, the patterns of movement begin to emerge, right? People resign from what you thought would be a dream job. I can remember I wanted this to work as a youth pastor at this one church, and the youth pastor was resigning, and I couldn't believe that anybody would resign from such a dream job. Yet they do. And each time we accomplish something, isn't the reality not quite what we imagined it would be? I mean, I actually got the job, that dream job that I thought was going to be amazing. I can remember saying in my first month, I never want to leave. I have everything I ever want. Little did I know that several months from then, I would be fired from that one too. You see, our relationships at that time in our life, they take a ton of effort on us. And if you're young and you're engaged or getting married, then you realize that relationships take a toll on your energy supply too. You can't really spend everything on your dreams anymore because now your dreams include somebody else. You add to that children or something else, and you can start to see how people get derailed in life, and the settling proposal starts to look more appealing. That new thing that we were once so proud of, it just seems small and short-sighted given the present realities, right? It's not so new and big and novel anymore, and no one's really that impressed with it. And so if you don't have anything else in the tank, then what do you got to give? You might as well just get a job, hunker down, and take care of business. You see, slowly in life, as we engage this mountain climb, this ant hill, this pile of people, we begin to serve right where we are. We learn things. We gain power. We gain a little prestige, a little respect, a little confidence along the way. And also along the way, we collect a lot of baggage. I mean, we carry things and hold on to things that we shouldn't. I mean, these are the things that weigh us down and they drain us. And we gain attachments to things that we shouldn't be attached to. I mean, let's face it. These are our little pets that stroke our egos. I really need that title. I remember being so married to the licensure of being a licensed minister with a certain organization. And so when I was looking at other ministry opportunities, I was afraid to leave the organization because I'd have to forfeit my licensure. And what would I be if I wasn't a licensed minister? Right? It's amazing how these little pet projects stroke our egos. I need that job title. I need that income. I need to keep everything going. All the balls in the air that I'm juggling will all fall if I lose this one little thing. And so we keep these things when we attach ourselves to them, and they reassure us somehow that we're okay. And then we just compare ourselves and our progress to everybody else. And they just show up something about us, don't they? These little pets that we attach ourselves to, these end up owning us in direct proportion to our value of them. And so you have people who won't leave institutions that they know are corrupt because, you know, gosh, I'd have to give up my title. I'd have to give up all that I've worked for. Further on, we realize that this is how it's always been, how it's always going to be. And you start looking at every institution with some kind of question mark, like, is that any better? Probably not. And it's the warp and woof, of climbing the ant pile. And it gives to us and it takes away from us. And we've been disappointed by success, and now we question what is really at the top of this thing. You see, and if we give this the effort that we started with, we know that there will be nothing left of us by the time we're even halfway there. So we're going to spend everything that we are trying to climb up to something that we're not even sure we want anymore. And if we are to be among the few at the top, if we were able to succeed in that kind of a climb, the cycle is not stopped, right? As soon as you reach the top, there's another one right behind you who wants your spot. And so our fate is ultimately the same as those at the bottom. Whether you're at the top or the bottom, it all ends. It all comes to an end. We all die, right? Solomon said this is a grievous evil in the world, that the man who uses wisdom gains so much and he has to die and leave it to a person who didn't strive with that kind of wisdom. He has to leave it to a fool, perhaps. Doesn't seem fair. And so what's the point? And that was Solomon's question, right, in the book of Ecclesiastes. I mean, why work the system at all? Why not do the end around? Why not just leapfrog and do your own thing? And I think we see this a lot with millennials today. They've seen their parents and other generations climbing this big ant pile of accumulation, and they see that it's futile, and it leaves them in debt, and it leaves them in prisons that they can't get out of. And so we have very skeptical generation that's saying, I'm not getting on the grid. I'm not strapping myself to a mortgage. I'm not buying an expensive car. I'm not going to build a life that costs me so much that I have to sacrifice everything, all my time and money on the machine, right? That's the question. And let's ask it. Why not spend our energy on enjoying what we have, right? These types of questions are really the domain of despair, if you didn't realize it. I mean, Solomon was right. The increase in wisdom increases vexation. I mean, these point to a soul that has concluded that there is nothing new here to create. And without the vantage point of the higher levels, we just become stuck here until the day we die, don't we? But there is something, right? He says there is gain in wisdom. There is gain. It is better to be wise than to be a fool, right? So there, what is it that we can gain? What is it that's there? What can we see that's just a bit higher up the pile? What is it just beyond the horizon? You see, these questions are important. They get us somewhere. What happens when the feedback loop returns on itself? You see, much of life boils down to time and money. And this is where I think the generation that's emerging, that is trying to stay off the grid, is ultimately going to run into a problem. Because they do have a lot of time, they don't have very much money. And while they are certainly not strapping themselves to debt, which is wise, they are also not accumulating any wealth. And so this is a generation that is doomed to be in need, and their children will be in greater need. Whereas generations before, although they're working and strapping themselves to accumulate some debt for a house or for a car or for a life, all those things are wealth that can be passed on from one generation to the next. And they can be leveraged. They can be, you know, it helps you to accumulate more. And so this is what happens. It comes down to time and money. And when we are poor, we have so much time and hardly any resources to do anything with it, right? You have all the time in the world to go travel, but you have no money, right? And when you have a lot of money, so often that comes by the accumulation of money. It takes so much out of us that it leaves us no time. And so to have resources and no time to enjoy them is just another ditch of despair, the opposite side of the road. And we kind of get to this conclusion that death is the only off-ramp from this repetitive cycle of effort and output, of attainment and disappointment. It just kind of goes like this. You dream and you strive and you receive something, and then you just start again or you quit until we all die. Just a cycle that goes on and on and on. Keep dreaming, keep striving, keep receiving. I remember when I was a pastor of a recent church, that, you know, the pastor said, you know, Kev, I love your ambition and I love your zeal, but I don't know if I have that many bullets left in my chamber. I don't know if I can keep firing it. It's just too many disappointments have set in, right? Now, this sounds horribly stark and empty, but the question emerges, where do we derive our meaning? Where does meaning come from during our days doing laps around the sun? I mean, what is meaningful anymore? I mean, if the job is ultimately not meaningful because it's just a means to an end, then what is there? Is it just family? Well, if it's just family, then why not work and just stay home and have kids, right? Obviously, the answer's settled right there in your mind. See, wisdom reveals that as long as there is today, then each of us is needed. There's something about each one of you and something about myself that's unique, and it's required in the world, and that's why you got up and saw the sun today. You see, the new thing that we so naively thought we would or could give to the world, it's still there. It's just not a thing at all. See, that hunger, that passion, that drive, that need to be acceptance, that need to be validated, that you know, I want to bring this to the world, that thing, that new thing isn't a thing. The new that we will bring to the new world is really ourself. Each and every day, you need to bring you to the world. See, each dream, each effort, each obtainment, it was never to be possessed by you because it was already a part of you. It needs to be dispossessed of you. It needs to be given away. That dream, that effort, that obtainment, it will never be enjoyed as long as you're clutching your fist. It can only be enjoyed if you open your hand. See, instead, all of these things, these dreams, these efforts, our obtainment, our struggle, our possessions, instead, they shaped us into increasing conformity to that which inspired us so deeply in our youth. And so meaning is the byproduct. It's not an end product. Meaning is the byproduct of the soul and the effort behind every endeavor. It is not the endeavor itself. And what's amazing is a lot of people think the endeavor has meaning, but meaning is the byproduct of the endeavor. It's what's behind the endeavor that has meaning. So while we are trying to make and shape the world, God was using the world to make and shape us. That's the reality. And those who miss this nuance will struggle with despair their whole life. And those who grasp it are going to find the key to a peaceful and productive life. I promise you, that is the key. This comes from the wisest man who ever lived, King Solomon. Now, while we thought we were making something new, it turns out that the new has been making us all along.